Equipping the saints with sound biblical instruction. This is K-Wave 107.9.
Hello and welcome to Pastor's Perspective, sponsored by Calvary Chapel Costa Mesa. My name is Brian Perez, and if you are listening on this Wednesday, the 17th of April, 2024, we are live, and we would love to chat with you a little bit later. We're going to open up the phone lines to get your questions on the specific topic that we're dealing with today, because we have a special guest in the studio. Brian Broderson of Calvary Chapel Costa Mesa is joining me in the studio, and we have a special guest who is not only in the studio with us right now, he's going to be speaking at Calvary Costa Mesa this evening. Brian, who is our special guest?
Who is our special guest? Well, Miles McPherson is right here across from me. It's great to see you, Miles.
Nice to see you. Nice to be back. I love radio studios. I love the headphones. I'm like a little kid. I love the radio.
I mean, the last time I had any kind of really serious conversation with you, I think, was right in this room where you were sitting in that seat and I was sitting here. So it was a while ago.
Was it five years ago?
Something like that. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I guess it was just pre-COVID. I know we talked about your book, Third Option.
Yes.
Because I'd read the book. I thought, this is a great book, and I wanted to talk to you about it, and you came in, and we talked about it. So
awesome.
Yeah. So what's been going on for the past 5 years?
Oh, man, you know, COVID.
Yes.
Church, life, division, the world falling apart. We were in Israel, and I was telling the teachers today that we took off from Israel October 7th.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow. When we left.
Yeah, when we were getting on the plane, we were getting text messages that the bombs were dropping.
And, yeah.
And so that was, you talk about a God moment, that we were there 10 days leading up to October 7th.
Yep.
And what an education to prepare me for being in church the next day.
Yeah.
To say, here's what is going on.
Yeah. Well, I had a little thing around that too, because I was scheduled to be in Israel. And at the last minute, my wife said, because we go to Cyprus, but we generally, you know, fly into Tel Aviv, spend a couple of days in Israel, then make our way over to Cyprus. So this year, my wife just out of nowhere says, I don't want to go to Israel this year. I don't want to stop in Israel. And I go, oh, honey, it's great. You know, we want to see our friends. No, I don't want to do it. It's too stressful. I just want to go to Cyprus. Okay, fine. So we changed our flights. And
what was the date?
It was October 7th.
Wow.
Yes. That was
you probably would have got stuck in Germany.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We flew into Cyprus.
Wow.
That day.
Wow.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah, it was that trip was a trip, and then what happened after was amazing.
Oh gosh, yeah.
For us to have been there.
Yeah, totally. So you're still pastoring?
I am, Rock Church.
The Rock Church.
We just had 24-year anniversary in February, excited, very excited about what God's doing.
Yeah, good. Well, you can tell us about some of it. But was there a specific thing that we were going to talk about today?
Well, we kind of want to invite people to come out tonight to Calvary Chapel Costa Mesa Wednesday night at 6:30. Miles will be the guest speaker. This is part of the Calvary Chapel Schools night. We've invited Miles to come speak. And so back in 2018, you wrote this book. Well, you were probably writing the book before 2018, but it came out in 2018, The Third Option. And so we want to talk about the book, which is available, by the way, at the chapel store of Calvary Chapel Costa Mesa. If you stop by tonight or anytime, you can pick it up there. It'll also be for sale this evening after the event, probably before the event, too. But so your book is called The Third Option. So we want to know what that third option is. But I think in order to know what the third option is, we should probably find out what options one and two are.
Yes. And I'm going to have someone hand me my Bible because I left it out in the hallway. Yes, the third option. Well, give you context, I grew up in a black neighborhood, went to Catholic school for 8 years in a white neighborhood. I have a half Chinese black grandmother, white grandmother, two black grandfathers from Jamaica, West Indies. And to make things complicated, my father told me I was adopted from Puerto Rico, only because of the way I look. So I grew up thinking, am I Chinese, black, Puerto Rican? So I'm learning Spanish. I'm actually preaching a sermon in Spanish on Cinco de Mayo.
Are you really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've done it before, but you know, it's a labor.
You can teach me some Spanish because mine is pretty bad.
No hablas español?
No mucho. No, muy poquito.
Poquito, okay. Necesitas practicar tu español.
Sí.
just say sí. but we live in an us versus them culture. You're either for me or against me. And we see that in Joshua, where Joshua was leading the Israelites into the promised land. And he's confronted by the commander of the Lord's army. And he says, it came to pass in Joshua 5:13, that when Joshua was by Jericho, he lifted up his eyes and he looked, and behold, a man stood opposite him with a sword drawn in his hand. And Joshua said to him, are you for us or our adversary? And in a culture of division, which is what we live in, you're either for me or against me. There's only, those are your two options, whether it's be politically Republican, Democrat, or you're for or against the police, or you're for or against Black Lives Matter. You know, you always have to take a position. I'm either for you or against you. And so Joshua, God's man, leading God's people into God's land, you would think God would say, I'm on your side. Mm-hmm. And he said, no.
He just said no.
He said, are you for us or our adversaries? And the commander said, no. It's like, I used to ask my kids, you want ice cream? And you want ice cream or a, you know, or whatever. And they were, sure. And it's like, no, either yes or yeah, give me an answer. And so Jesus said, no, I'm the commander of the Lord's army. I'm on my own side.
That's right. Yeah.
And if you don't do what I say, I'm going to be against you. And so unity is all about not picking a side, a political side, or some group or some activist. We're not called to be activists. We're called to be prophetic. So the third option is that we honor what we have in common, which is the image of God, and that we see things from God's perspective, not a group, people group, a political group, ethnic group, us perspective. And so the book is all about how do we, in this divided world, how do we focus on our similarities and bring honor to our similarities? Because in reality, diversity, anything that you could say is part of diversity, like we have diverse skin color, diverse culture. Really, that all that really means is that they are variations of things that are the same. Mm-hmm. So if someone's black, white, brown, well, in reality, we're all brown. That's a whole nother story. But there are variations of color. Mm-hmm. We have variations of culture. We have variations of language. But the culture wants to say, you're this and I'm that, like we're different. When really, we're just a variation of the same thing. I mean, if you think about color, people get tans, mm-hmm. right? You have an olive-ness to your skin, Brian. I'm talking to Brian now, and you do too, for that matter. But if you lay in the sun, you're going to get darker.
Yeah.
And so—
And we like that.
Yeah. Well. thanks for telling us. But
everybody wants to be tan.
Right? Here's the thing. We celebrate the tan we get in the sun,
that's right.
But we vilify the tan we get in the womb, right?
Oh.
Yeah. So, again, it depends on where the tan comes from and depending on who you're talking to, and that's the problem. But in reality, you know, I was telling someone recently that white people are more colored than black people to me. Mm-hmm. Because in the springtime, you're white. In the summer, you're brown or red. Yeah. And then when you get cold, you're blue. So, but instead of looking at it as you're that and I'm this, we're really variations of people made in the image of God, and God is a creative God, and why can't we celebrate his creativity?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So here's what I wanted to ask you about. Where we are today versus where we were the last conversation we had. So now, you know, 3-4 years have passed, and the race discussion, of course, has, you know, elevated in the last 5 years majorly, but it's kind of ebbed and flowed. But I think it's stayed at a pretty intense level. I read probably a dozen books that were similar to yours, you know, addressing the same kinds of issues and so forth. I really, really, I told you this before, I really appreciated your approach. I thought that your approach was very helpful. It was very practical, like gives you some tools like, okay, yeah, just like what you're talking about right there, like realizing that we're not, it's not us and them. It's we're really a variation of one another. So how do we, but what do you think today, do you feel like we've made any headway or do you feel like we're still stuck?
Well, if we back up and say racism is first spiritual, then political and cultural, it is the devil convincing us that someone's image of God in them is inferior to the image of God in me. And then I can politicize that and make politics and rules to ensure that this inferior thing is held away. You know, institutional racism, which is very real. and so that, from a spiritual perspective, you know, the devil's not going away. He's going to just
keep beating that,
reforming it, representing it. I think the good that has come out of it, people are talking about it. The bad that has come out of it, people are talking that a lot of people who were racist before undercover have now got permission from leaders in government, leaders in the community to be more vocal, to say whatever they want to say. And so, so in one sense, one of the frustrations I had before I wrote the book, and it's better now, but it was very hard to get white people to even talk about it because it's like, hey, that don't affect me. I don't want to get involved in that conversation. And now it's a lot more people are talking about it, and maybe some to some degree, some people have become experts when they're not really experts, and they have a bunch of answers now that they want to tell everybody, but they're not, they haven't experienced it. So I think it's better in the sense that people are talking about it. A lot of efforts have been made to try to give people better opportunities, some good, some bad, some overblown. A lot of money has been thrown at it. A lot of it's probably wasted because it's just, it's guilt money. So talking about it is a positive thing. But at the same time, there are people that said, nah, you know, we're racist and now we're going to tell you. And so is it better? I think as long as people are talking, it's a good thing.
And I think, you know, we understand on a lot of different levels that there is one way that you almost expect the world meaning the people outside of the church, there's almost one way you expect them to act on a number of different things, right? It's like, well, yeah, this is just what non-Christians do. What really becomes complicated and kind of like, how do we explain this, is when you have that same dynamic working in the context of the church, when you have Christian people that aren't necessarily behaving any differently than non-Christian people when it comes to this topic. So I think, this is my humble opinion on it, I think if the church could ever get its act together in this particular area, and I think the image of God is a great place to start. Let's just go back to the beginning, right? But I feel like if the church could ever really get its act together and model what the New Testament actually teaches about, you know, different,
unity,
different people groups coming together, Jew and Gentile in the New Testament context, largely. I think that we could have a wonderful impact on the society around us. People could have a model and say, hey, look what those guys are doing.
Yeah. You know, one of the frustrating things for me teaching on this is hearing people say, well, we just preach Jesus and that's enough. And I think Christians hide behind what they in theory they should be, because they don't want to deal with it and they don't deal with it. And, you know, getting companies, actually companies are forced to talk about it. Christians can say, you know, we're just going to preach the Bible. Well, loving your neighbor is the Bible, you know? And, you know, so I think Christians do need to put into practice what loving your neighbor really means and what bearing one another's burden really means. You can't bear my burden if you don't want to hear about it.
Yeah.
And you can't bear my burden if you don't believe I have it.
Yeah.
And so these are very practical. And I think the opportunity is great because right now there are people, and mostly, for the most part, whites in America can kind of isolate themselves from all the racial stuff before. Now they can't, because it's now. And that either some are saying, okay, I'm going to deal with it and learn and grow. And then others are like, I don't like it because it's uncomfortable. But it's an opportunity for believers to say, I'm going to learn about what my black and brown, and hey, how about women? How about all the minority groups? What do they experience? Just out of love. You know, I had a person tell me once they didn't see my color. And I know people say that, but they only say it when they see someone of color. So that proves that they can see the color. Because you never had a white person tell that to you, have you?
Not lately.
Not lately. But when I heard that, I had never heard that. I thought they were colorblind. I thought they had like a stigma. Because in my neighborhood, we saw color. But one of the things that saying is, and I'm not saying everybody that says that means this, but if you don't see someone's color, you can't identify with the burden that comes with the color. And therefore, how are you going to love them? How are you going to love them in that area anyway? And so I think the church just needs to step back and go, this is a spiritual issue and an opportunity to grow in my ability to love people, mm-hmm. not be an activist. Mm-hmm. And if you haven't had to learn about someone's burden and someone's life, and you just act like everybody's fine. Mm-hmm. Like I was in Hawaii, my wife and I, and there was this white lady with two African kids at the pool. And I heard them calling her mommy. And okay, she adopted them. So I'm looking at this. So I went up to her and I said, hey, how's that working out? So I said to her, how's that working out? And you know, we talked and she said, I never knew what my family was like until I got these kids.
Wow.
Because she didn't have to.
Yeah.
Everybody was the same. She says, I can't let my African kids go out at night with the bikes. I can let my white kids, my biological kids. And that was a eye-opening experience for her, because when you don't have to deal with it, you can kind of act like it's not there and think people make it up. Now she has it in her family, and her own family are living this out, things that she is ashamed of. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's a great opportunity for the church to step back and go, I'm a Christian. God has now given me opportunity to love people at a deeper level and be more vulnerable with people and more of a learner of people and their plight than before. Mm-hmm. That's a good thing. Mm-hmm. And I think we just look at it that way. And, you know, when you're accustomed to being the teacher, and you're accustomed to being the one telling people what to do, now you're on the back end and saying, I don't know. And you have to be a learner. There's nothing wrong with that. Just be a learner and be humble. And don't think because you got a black friend, now you know everything. Because you don't. Just be a learner. It's not bad. It's just, it may not be what you're accustomed to, but it's an opportunity for you to learn from God and learn how to be compassionate in a different way. There's a challenge in my book where I challenge white people to go to a place where you're the only white person. Mm-hmm. Just everybody's black, everybody's Hispanic, everybody's something but not what you are, and see how that feels. And the people I propose this to, they would tell me, oh, I got high blood pressure right now just thinking about it. I mean, just think about that statement. I mean, I had a guy tell me, listen, I live in my city, I live as far away from the black community as possible. And if I went to a black church, I would want to leave right away. I couldn't even be in a thing. This is a Christian man that writes books that all of us have read. And he's like, I can't run fast. He was telling me this.
Wow.
But, you know, so, I mean, this is, and so, okay, bro, now you just got to expose what the garbage in your heart, mm-hmm. which you need to repent of. But you got an issue. Now, in his circle, that's not a problem, whether he doesn't talk about it or not, whether he talks about it or not. But now God just said, I'm going to shine a light on some stuff in your heart that you got to deal with. Mm-hmm. And so I think for us as believers, you know, I'm in rooms where I'm the minority my whole life. And for some people listening right now, think about how many times you were the only person, your ethnicity, in a room, in a restaurant, on a city block. In a neighborhood for 2 miles straight, mm-hmm. nobody looks like you. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, what did you feel? Do you drive around those opportunities? Well, what does that tell you? And so I think it's an opportunity for us to kind of, I don't want to say come into reality, but to see another side of life that people live every day. Mm-hmm. And then say, God, how are you going to make me more like you with this?
What do you, like, your, I'm going to ask you specifically about your own experience in, because I just made, you know, kind of the general statement about in the church. I don't know that we're doing that great in this area. What's been your experience? Do you feel like, say, just in relation to the book, have you had a general positive reception among Christians with the book? Are people reaching out and saying, gosh, Miles, you know, we really need to have some help with this. Can you, do you get a...
The overwhelming majority of people love the idea of the third option, love the book, because, they do. We have a DEI training called similarity training that we do in churches, but also secular organizations. Mm-hmm. And it's six sessions based on the content in the book, and it's a secular version. But we call it similarity training, not diversity training, because mm-hmm. It's based on the fact that we're more similar. People love it because it's unifying. It's like, hey, everybody looks at each other and goes, that makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. So I actually did a presentation in front of a group, and this lady stood up and she said, I have a question for you. And I could tell it was a bad thing, or she was mad. And she says, but before I ask you that question, let me tell you, that was the best thing I ever heard on that. And then she asked me a question about nothing had to do with race. So it had to do with something else.
Yeah.
But no, the response is very positive. The only negative, I shouldn't say the only negative, the most negative thing is that whether people really want to talk about it.
Yeah.
Or whether they want to be the talk about it, to be the one. Because, you know, it's a landmine, especially for white people who it's a new topic. And you don't want to say the wrong thing, and the people jump on you, and then there's some blacks think, oh, it's open season now. I can say what I want to say, right before I couldn't. So that complicates it. But the response to the book, to the idea, is like, this is a solution to bring us together. And I think we have to be okay. In the training, we have six modules and six videos, teaching and workbook. And you can go to Third Option City, thirdoptiontraining.com to get that. But in each module, I say we're all on a journey. And so give each other grace because we're all learning. And everybody will be learning for the rest of their life. And, you know, I've been talking about this myself forever, you know, for 40 years.
Yeah.
My brother was a... Heisman runner-up as a quarterback in 1987. My brother was number one rated passer in the nation in 1987, but my brother's black. Black quarterbacks in 1987 were converted to wide receivers. Mm-hmm. Troy Aikman, legitimate, well-deserving Hall of Famer, was ranked number two to my brother. Mm-hmm. Troy Aikman was the number one draft choice. My brother was drafted in the fifth round. And so that conversation about that, and having to hear people say, well, it wasn't because of that. I'm like, bro, fourth in the nation, Sugar Bowl, undefeated, number one. Come on, he won 18 Player of the Year awards in NC2A Division I football. And you're going to tell me, what are you talking about? Mm-hmm. And at that time.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of a big spark in my life, you know, defending him.
Yeah.
And looking at his backup, who was white, get a job as a quarterback on the team that didn't draft him because they wanted to move him to his position. And so, you know, when you live that, and I could go on, but when you live that, being able to have a conversation with people was so difficult back then. Mm-hmm. Now you can have a conversation with people, but a lot of people didn't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
But so I think today people want to talk about it. They want to learn and to be able to give practical solutions and perspectives on the topic is what I love to do.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like, in some ways, you feel like we maybe are making, we're inching forward. We're maybe making some progress.
Yeah, I mean, I think in some ways we made a lot of progress, and in some ways,
I was going to say, is it like a two steps forward, three steps back kind of thing? Because I'm thinking you wrote this book like before the George Floyd thing happened.
Yeah.
And when you were watching all this unfolding on TV, were you kind of like, no, guys, there's a third option. We got to read my book.
Yeah.
I mean, what happened at that point?
Well, George Floyd was murdered. When it was killing me because my publisher ran out of books. I'm watching the people on all these millions of people. I'm like, you guys go to get my book. And it's like, we ran out. You know, people, it's a spiritual thing. People, there was a lot of pent up anger, right? Because all the police brutality cases that were kind of ignored, and all the other racism. And so it exploded. And we've, you know, that explosion, the shrapnel is still, mm-hmm. you know, simmering through the country. And the country is very different. And I think a lot of well-meaning people put things into place to help. But here's the thing. It's a heart issue. You can't legislate love. Mm-hmm. And so you can tell me I have to work there with you, or you have to give me this, you know, financial benefit. But it doesn't mean you're going to love me. And so at the end of the day, the only solution is a changed heart. Mm-hmm. You know, the Bible says from the heart yep. come murders and fornication, et cetera. Laws will never change that. And so at the end of the day, unless people's hearts are changed, now, over time, if you're in a room with a guy who's Mexican and you never met a Mexican, you may go, oh, you know what, they're not really that bad, you know, or vice versa. And so there's change there. But at the end of the day, it's about really the heart. Yeah. And yes, a lot of people are more open. But to say whether good, you know, I yeah. think the fact that we're talking about it is very, you know, is yeah. very positive.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, there's been a lot of polarization. I think there's some parts of the culture where on either side, it's always, it's a topic of and it's like 24/7. This is all people are talking about. You know, they're just talking about, you know, on the one side, they're talking about racism. On the other side, they're talking about, you know, DEI or whatever. And there's like these worlds that exist, you know, and Twitter or X, mm-hmm. as it is known now, is one of those worlds, you know, mm-hmm. where it's just like, it's just constant, this kind of stuff going on. And then, and this is a positive thing that I want to say. As I look at those two worlds, sometimes I think, yeah, I wonder how many people are just
numb.
But I wonder how many there are. I think there is a section of the culture that wants to keep the fires burning, that wants to keep stoking it, that wants to just keep the controversy going. And then, you know, you walk out your door and you kind of go out and live your life and you're like, you know, people are okay. You know, people are cool. They get along. And I'm not saying that that means that everything's good and now we just don't have to do anything. But I look at that and I think, okay, there are some people that are never going to be happy with any solution because that's not their objective. Their objective is just to keep causing trouble, stirring things up. But I am thankful that I think there are a large number of people that just, we want to live together.
We do want to get along.
We want
at the end of the day, if you just take one person at a time and love somebody, the person in front of you,
yes,
life is going to be good.
It's going to be good.
Life is going to be good. And you know, I happen to have a lot of relationships with all kinds of people all my life, so I don't really have, and I've had a lot of racism. But if you love people and give people grace to make mistakes,
yeah,
and move on and don't stress, but people make money from division.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No doubt about it.
Yeah.
But we have this training at Third Option Training.com. And
The Third Option Training.
The Third Option Training.
I looked it up, yeah.
The Third Option Training.com. And you can get the training for your school, for your church, for your business. And we'd love to come help you.
That'd be awesome. TheThirdOptionTraining.com is where you can find out more. This is Pastor's Perspective. I'm Brian Perez here with Brian Broderson of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, which is where our guest is going to be speaking tonight. It is Pastor Miles McPherson from The Rock Church in San Diego, also known as the Skittles Church. I read that in your book, and you can explain that when we come back, why you call it the Skittles Church. But yeah, give us a call if you've got questions about the topic. 888-564-6173 is our number. We are here live until 4 p.m. Pacific time on this Wednesday, the 17th of April, 888-564-6173. And for more information about Calvary Chapel Costa Mesa, where Miles will be speaking tonight, check out cccm.com. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in a few minutes. 888-564-6173. Back on Pastor's Perspective. Thank you so much for listening on the radio and for watching us online on Facebook and YouTube. We are here live on this Wednesday to talk to you and to talk to our guest. It's Miles McPherson from Rock Church in San Diego. He drove up to speak tonight at Calvary Chapel Costa Mesa. And before he speaks tonight, we said, hey, why don't you come to a radio program with us? And like he said at the beginning of the program, he loves being in radio studios. Why do you love being in radio studios? I mean, I do too. I know why I do, but why do you?
I think I missed the calling because these headphones, mm-hmm. I just love the sound of the headphones. I don't know. I just love the sound.
Well, we are hiring. So, you know, if you ever want to...
I just love talking on the radio.
Miles is the pastor of Rock Church in San Diego. I mentioned before the break that it's kind of called Skittles Church. It's like a bag of Skittles. Why do you say that?
Well, a bag of Skittles has a bunch of different colors in it. Mm-hmm. And our church is as diverse as San Diego. Mm. And we have everything that's in San Diego's in our church in droves.
Mm.
So different kinds of people, different mixed couples, everything you can imagine. So...
That's good because there's some people that would say no. Like we even had a call the other day that we couldn't get to, but it was one of those calls where, you know, the white church isn't doing things right, and you know we need and but it's not like your church is 100% black anything. Or anything. So I mean, there might be people who would even take issue with that. Would you say
that the church is
that the church is too diversified? Would you say not you guys? You want that. But are there people who might say, no, it should be predominantly black? Would you think that?
No.
Or what would you say to people who think that, I should say? Besides, I think you're a racist.
Yeah. I think the church, to me, if the churches are a product of their leadership, and it's not that if it's all white church, the leader's bad. But if people come to church and they see themselves on the stage or don't see themselves on the stage and other things or don't resonate with the music, they probably won't go there. It doesn't mean they're racist. Mm-hmm. But but I would say that the kingdom of heaven is going to be diverse. You know, even when people come and say, oh, you guys got loud music and you got smoke. I say, wait till you go to heaven. if you're worried about noise, wait till you get to heaven and hear the angels sing and the thrones shake. So I think a church should match the community.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a diverse community and you're only reaching one segment, you know, it's not that you're bad. It's not that it could be a product of you intentionally targeting one, or it could be just a product of who you are, mm-hmm. or both. So, but I would say diversity is the kingdom of God.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Yeah. I think you hit the nail on the head. Your church should reflect your community. So if you're doing it right, biblically, I mean, then you're going to draw people from your community, and it's not going to be a matter of, you know, skin color or cultural background or whatever. You know, I think any multicultural or multi-ethnic community should have multi-ethnic churches too.
Yeah. So there's a concept in called redlining, where banks would take a red pen and put it around a community, mm-hmm. and say, we're going to hike up loans in this community.
Yep.
And this is an example of institutional racism. I see someone ask about that. Churches do that.
Mm-hmm.
They say, we're going to be here, but we're going to minister in this community. But we're not going to go 5 minutes over here. Mm-hmm. Now, we'll fly over the ocean to go to Africa because we're only going to be there a week. we'll go to Tijuana, but we're not going to go 5 minutes down the road. And is that racist? I think the only pastor can know why that is, but it's probably a lot of fear. But I think that we have the gospel. God, you've given us this geographic area. Let us not carve out just the places we feel comfortable.
Yeah.
You've given us these people. Let's test our love for them yeah. and our courage to go minister to them.
And you know, it's so much more exciting to have diversity. It's great. I love it. I love the fact that our church, I think it's reflective of our community. And I love talking to people from Asia and having a conversation Sunday morning with a Japanese husband and wife who live here but just returned from a trip to Tokyo. You know, they grew up there and everything. And just to kind of get their take, just to hear what they have to say about it. Or I might talk to a family from Africa or a family from Long Beach or a family that's driving in from LA. They just feel like, yeah, we want to be at this church. I think that's one of the richest aspects of what we have with the church. And I don't know why anybody would not want that. To me, it just seems like homogenous, unless you're just in an entirely homogenous community. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think the evidence of love your neighbor as yourself and loving your enemies, if you will, the most vivid evidence of that is to have a diverse group of people loving each other.
Yeah.
When you walk into a place mm-hmm. and see all these kind of people, the first thing you're going to ask is, what is going on?
Yeah, exactly. You know,
it must be a concert of some, you know, some entertainer, but to see people from all different walks of life worship a single God is yeah. probably the most, very vivid evidence that something is happening.
Something's happening, yeah. Yeah, I love that.
Would you say, Miles McPherson, that everybody has a little bit of racism in them, some kind of bias or something? Because there's a lot of people who might be thinking, no, not me. I love everybody. But do you ever think that there might be at least a little trace?
Yeah, I think that, well, we're all sinners. Mm-hmm. You know, someone asked me the other day, well, someone born this way, and we were talking about being gay or something like that. I said, the way you were born doesn't matter. Because what I mean by that is if you were born with cancer, the question is cancer wrong? It's not whether you were born with it, because if you're born with cancer, they're still going to try to fix it. Mm-hmm. And so we're born sinners. We're born murderers. We're born adulterers. We're born fornicators, right? We're born with the propensity to disobey God. So I don't know. I have to think about it, if there's sins we're not born with the proclivity to do. And so I think that when you, racism is such an inflammatory term. I think that we are all born with the idea that I'm going to be around people, that I'm going to be most comfortable with people like me. And what I'm taught is like me is really the question. Is it people who look like me, or is it athletes, or is it rich people like me? And so I think all people, and in our training, one of our sessions is called grouping. And grouping is identifying people as like me or not like me. In group, out group. And people who are like me are people who have something in common with me. Mm-hmm. But I decide that. So you're a guy, so okay, you're like me. Mm-hmm. But you're Mexican, so I could say you're not like me. Mm-hmm. So I have to decide, am I going to choose the part of you that's like me or not? And
right.
So we all grow up like that. And sometimes that is, if you grow up in a white neighborhood or black neighborhood, people who look different than you are going to be the other, at least initially, until you get to know them. Mm-hmm. So I think we all have a tendency to be comfortable with people who are like us. That's just kind of human nature. But then, and then if you're taught things that reinforce that those people are this and those people are that, now you're taught, stay away from them. They're
right.
scary.
Right.
And that may just be, that's what I was taught, you know, and it may not be as malicious as I'm going to kill them. You know, I'm going to do all this. I just don't know. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people are in that boat where it's foreign to them, so they just stay away versus calling them a racist, right? I teach about blind spots where you don't know what you don't know. And even saying, I don't see color, to some people, that's an innocent way of saying, I'm not going to treat you any different. It's not the best wording, you know, but it could be offensive to the person, but it's a blind spot. You didn't know how that person was receiving it. Mm-hmm. So don't say it again, because the only reason you're saying it is because you do see the color. So don't say it and don't believe it, because it's not true. But would that person be a racist? No. But so I think that we all have a tendency to be around people that we like us and that we feel comfortable with.
Yeah. And I thought that was good. And, you know, there are many things in the book I thought were balanced and I think, you know, reasonable, just like what you're saying here. I think prejudice is a better word, and prejudice doesn't, it's not a skin color issue. It's not an ethnicity issue. It can be, you know, I grew up in the surf culture. I was prejudiced against people who
did skateboards,
or people who came from, you know, I lived at the beach. So people who came from the other side of the freeway.
Wow.
I was prejudiced against them. Wow. You know, what are these guys doing on my beach
or my turf?
Or I had a standard. I had a level of a performance that if you met my level of performance, then you could kind of hang in my group. But if not, no, you know, you're out of the group.
Yeah. So it's our sinful. It's pride.
It is.
Straight up pride.
Yeah. But what about, and of course, you know, you're talking about your brother earlier, and of course you were a professional football player yourself. You were. I wonder today is like, do people still know that you played in the NFL, or is that something so far back in your past?
Old people do,
yes. Okay. Well, I qualify.
Yeah, I played for the Chargers for y'all listening from 1982 to 1985. The San Diego Chargers.
The San Diego Chargers.
Not the LA Chargers.
You know, the other day I took some friends because the Charger training camp is right here, right across the street from us, you know. So I took some friends from Africa, actually, and we were going over, and I pointed out to them, I said, and, you know, the San Diego Chargers, they practice right here. And then I said, wait, they're not called the San Diego Chargers anymore. But in that world, so you gave an example, because there's a question on the board about systemic racism.
Yeah, yeah.
So the example you gave about your brother being sort of pushed aside for another guy to come in, a white guy, because I remember I watched the NFL from the time I was a little kid. You, in the 60s and 70s, you never saw a black quarterback. I mean, it was...
Yeah, one here, one there.
I think Warren Moon was the first black quarterback I remember ever.
Yeah, John Gilliam from Pittsburgh Steelers. Harris, John, not John Harris. He played here for the Rams.
Okay.
Jim Harris, I think it was.
Yeah.
But... Yeah, that's an example of systematic. Another example, my sister was going to buy a house in Maryland in a white neighborhood, her and her husband. And the agent said to her, I'm not supposed to sell houses here to black people. Mm-hmm. That's systematic.
Yeah.
And when I grew up, they ended up doing it anyway. But in Long Island, New York, where I lived, there was a town called Levittown. I think it was the first suburb in New York. Mm-hmm. And it was illegal to sell or rent your home to a black family. Mm-hmm. That's systematic. Mm-hmm. So all those people who moved there that were white, they were able to build generational wealth by getting a house, you know, real estate, appreciation, sell the house. But you couldn't do that. Now, of course, you can.
Yeah.
There's a lady in San Diego, and her deed says you can't sell or to a black person. Now, it's antiquated. They do it. But that was the law. So that would be an example of systematic racism where these people are inferior and we're going to put laws in place to keep them separate.
Yeah.
So that.
Now here's a question that people have asked, because of course the examples you're giving, and then we could go back, obviously the Jim Crow era and all of that, and find tons of that stuff. The question that I have people ask today is if you mention systemic racism, well, where is that happening today? That would be the question that people would ask. Like, okay, we're talking about the 70s, we're talking about redlining back in the, you know, 20th century, mid-20th century. Today, where would you still see that?
Today, I would say today, the problem that has happened, let me back up, hopefully I'll answer your question. The answer to division, legal, political division, is a changed heart. Mm-hmm. And so since then, there have been a lot of laws and laws, if you will, to try to reverse it and do it the other way. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, it's really going to be about a changed heart.
Yep.
Now, are there companies or people in power who say, we are going to keep this all one thing, you know, ownership of certain teams or things like that. Mm-hmm. But I think today the ripple effect is trying to fix these things with laws to either give people more opportunity and shut some out. Mm-hmm. And it never works. What has to happen is a changed heart.
Yeah.
And so if I may have a law, but it doesn't mean I'm going to still love you. It doesn't mean my heart's changed. Mm-hmm. I think that's really what has to happen. And so the racism now is people in charge saying, you know, I'm not going to write anything down. But for me, my policy, like I was just talking to someone the other day that they were talking about, and I think I wasn't at church, but that would be my answer to today.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned earlier you used these letters DEI when you were talking about your similarity training. So DEI, diversity,
equity,
and inclusion, or inclusion, right? Is that what it is? So some people would think that is really, really bad. Bad stuff. We don't want to be lowering the bar. We don't want to be lowering the standard just to let somebody in because they were, you know, underprivileged or discriminated against at some point. What do you think as a person who grew up in the system where you experienced discrimination? Do you think DEI is a good solution to that?
DEI covers a lot of efforts to bring people together. So they could be under DEI, you could say, we're going to educate people what racism is under DEI. It's great. So what I do is educate people on how to get along and how to value their similarity. That's under the banner of that, if you will. Yeah. We're going to change it to SEI, similarity, equity, inclusion. But it's the same thing. So we're trying to help people talk about this issue of race and division and help people get along. To me, that's valuable. Mm-hmm. Now, underneath that same banner can be we're going to help employers try to find minority people who are skilled as the people that are white, that because they only look in these areas. They don't know where to find. So we're going to help you find minority people that have the same skills as the people you're looking for. Mm-hmm. That's great. Okay, get opportunity, access. Because people have access. I was at a school the other day, and I was asking these kids what they're going to do when they grow up. And this kid said, I'm going to take over my family business. He has access. Fabulous. Mm-hmm. Some people don't have access to things. So how can we give access to more people? I think that's a positive thing. Mm-hmm. I think the problem comes when you start to say, because you're this, you have a lesser requirement. Mm-hmm. Now, if you happen to not have gone to this school, we want to help you make sure you get the same education. Mm-hmm. That should happen. But I think it's dangerous where when you, and it's offensive. Like I've had people say to me, hey, you're a credit to your race. I'm like, man, what do you think of my race?
Yeah. Yeah, that was a compliment.
Right, is that a compliment? Or you talk really good for an athlete. What did you expect? So I think don't insult me by saying we're going to give you, even though you're not really as good as. Yeah. And so I think that's offensive to people. I think I think all humans are made in the image of God and they have crazy potential.
Yeah.
And we need to nurture that potential.
Yeah.
So under DEI, people who say it's all bad don't really know all what it means. Yeah. And they probably don't believe that there is racism.
Yeah.
And there's kind of different kinds. There's personally mediated racism, which says, I'm just not going to hire black people, or I'm not going to hire white people,
yeah,
or I'm not going to hire Mexicans, right? There's people who think that and believe that, right? So, you know, DEI is kind of like the police, I shouldn't say the police, in some forms of saying, we're going to make sure everybody at least is aware.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, if my heart's not changed, it's man's political, I shouldn't say political, organizational effort to compensate for a dark heart in the country. Mm-hmm. Not everybody has that dark heart, but let's make sure we give people opportunity. Now, if you're on the other side of it and you can benefit from people at least looking at you and saying, okay, maybe I'm going to give you a shot where before I wouldn't even consider you.
Yeah.
That's a great thing.
That's a good thing.
But don't patronize me and say, well, you know, you don't really have to do as good because you're not, you're inferior.
Yeah.
No, No, I'm not. Yeah. My brother was when they tried to change my brother's position. It was the Cincinnati Bengals, different coach. They said, "We're going to change you to defensive back." My brother said, "I'm better than the quarterback you have now." Mm-hmm. Of course, he's a confident football player. They didn't draft him. Mm. The next year, they drafted his backup. Or I don't know if he's drafted or he got a free agent. But you know, don't patronize me. I'm a quarterback. That's what I am. Mm.
Yeah.
And you know, he had to live that out. And at the time, he didn't get the great opportunity he should have, and he only played a couple of years, went to Canada, but. At least he was true to what he was called to do.
Yeah.
So I don't think we should patronize people. Mm-hmm. I think we should challenge them. Now, there's another kind of racism called internalized racism where you believe what you've been told and you live down to it. Mm-hmm. That's a whole nother topic.
You just live with a heavy inferiority because that's just what you grew up thinking about yourself.
Yeah, you're told you're less than and you say, okay, I'm just going to go for the lesser job.
Mm.
And I'm not going to aspire because I'm never going to get an opportunity. And you negotiate yourself out of it. Now, I would say in today's age, there's a lot of that, but there's a lot of people saying, "Nah, I'm going to go out and get mine."
Yeah,
and they do, they're realizing, "No, we've always had this opportunity. I mean, ability."
Yeah.
So I think people who say DEI, I think that it's not a perfect system because only love can really make it work. But it's an effort to help people. At least stop doing the same thing, thinking we're going to bring about a different result, which is unity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Your book is called The Third Option. So there's people listening who are saying, yes, this is what I want to do. I'm going to get this book. I'm going to sign up for the training because I really want to get in on this. I believe the third option is the right option. But now they might be apprehensive to engage with someone because that person might want to take the us versus them approach. So how do you bring that in?
Well, you are going to absolutely, you're surrounded by us versus them people. And the book is designed to equip you, encourage you to engage those people, love those people. Because you're going to learn about blind spots. People don't know what they don't know. You're going to learn about grouping, how, you know, they probably put you in another category, but you can recategorize them and say, look, you're like me because you're a man. You're like me because your son and daughter's on my soccer team, right? We have more things in common. So as they learn that information, those skills, they're able to interact with those people, which is the whole point, is that how do I interact with people, not the people who have read the book like me, but people who haven't read the book.
Mm-hmm.
And I will tell you the same thing. Most people that I know, And listen, we get around. We talk to millions of people all the time. People don't want to. They just want to get along. They really do. And I talk to white supremacists. I got white supremacists that come to my church. At the end of the day, when you love people, love is a powerful. When you respect people, you listen to people. It's a powerful, powerful thing. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to try it. I think people are scared of each other for no reason. Mm-hmm. You know,
because of what they've been taught. Or what the culture feeds them.
And at the end of the day, the statistics will prove if you're white, the person who's going to hurt you the most is going to be a white person. If you're black, the person who's going to hurt you the most physically is going to be a black person. If you're Mexican, the person who's going to hurt you the most is going to be a Mexican person. I mean, at the end of the day. And so we're not that someone who's not like you can't hurt you, but at the end of the day, I think we're wasting a lot of energy imposing on people this fear versus really getting to know people. People are fascinating, amazing. They're made in the image of God. I love talking to people. And if you could sit down and ask people about their life, their family, you'll realize, wow.
Yeah. It's amazing.
If you talk to someone from another country and ask them how many languages they speak, we Americans can barely get English out.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, speak the brother from Africa. I speak 7 languages. I'm working on number 8.
This is an unending experience that I've had for decades now, and I still love every moment of it. It's just what you described, just meeting people from all over the place and listening to their story. And you're just, human beings are so fascinating, and their lives, their stories are so fascinating. I mean, I'm talking to people so often, I'm thinking, dang, I wish I was a film producer, man. I would make a movie out of this person's life. It's so fascinating to listen to that stuff. So what are you talking about tonight? What's going to be the topic?
The parents are coming, and we're going to talk about my training and help them understand the principles of the third option.
Yeah.
Because obviously our kids in school and, you know, the kids are dealing with everything in the world about division and, you know, saying racial things to each other.
Yeah.
And so helping the parents know, hey, here's a way you can talk to you. Here's a perspective of how to deal with race yourself. Mm-hmm. And then it'll help you guide your kids.
Great.
So that's tonight at Calvary Chapel Costa Mesa. Starts at 6:30. You are all welcome to come out. CCCM.com is the website for more information about tonight's event. To get more details about Miles McPherson, visit milesmcpherson.com. M-C-P-H-E-R-S-O-N. That's how you spell McPherson. You can purchase Miles's book there, and you can find out about the training as well, the third option similarity training, again at milesmcpherson.com. Thank you all for joining us today. God bless you. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. Today's episode will be archived on Facebook, YouTube, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts a little bit later. So check it out. Share it with your friends as well. For Brian Broderson and our guest, Miles McPherson, I'm Brian Perez, and Pastor's Perspective was sponsored by Calvary Chapel Costa Mesa.
Equipping the saints with sound biblical instruction. This is K-Wave 107.9.